League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast joins you. Fun time to be a Brewers fan, guys. Beautiful start to the 2019 season. Milwaukee wins 3 of 4 against the St. Louis Cardinals. Three close wins. One decided in walk-off fashion on the offensive end with a Christian Yelich two-run double on Sunday. One decided on the defensive end when Lorenzo Cain's homer-saving catch that will live in infamy, or I don't know, infamy makes it sound bad, will live forever, ended the home opener, the season opener, in wild fashion on Thursday. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. I'm going to be joined shortly by Todd Rosiak to discuss this awesome start to the new season, 1 year after the Brewers, of course, go to Game 7 of the NLCS, pick up right where they left off with Christian Yelich on an absolute tear, homering in all four games to start the season, and goes into Monday looking to become the first player in Major League history to homer in the first five games of a Major League season. He's got a homer-friendly park in Great American Ballpark of Cincinnati, a place where he hit a cycle last year, so that's definitely not something to rule out. And, of course, Josh Hader is pitching out of his mind through an immaculate inning. Three strikeouts, 9 pitches on Saturday night to lock down his second save. 2 innings in the opener, of course, closing with a long fly ball from Jose Martinez that was caught at the fence by Lorenzo Cain, saved a home run, gave everybody a jolt of energy to kick off this season. The Brewers lost the next night, but came back to win back-to-back games again Sunday with Yelich homering early and then driving in 2 runs in the 9th to give the Brewers a 5-4 victory. After I talk to Todd, I've got Ed Cedar, third base coach of the Milwaukee Brewers. He is a really fun guy to talk to. I really enjoyed talking to him. He's an Illinois native, played for the Chicago White Sox organization. That was the team he rooted for growing up. And he's been with the Brewers forever, more than a quarter century in the organization. He was throwing batting practice way back when in Chandler, Arizona during spring training, and has worked his way slowly up the system to the point where he's a veteran big league coach at this point. Third base coach. He also does so much more for this Brewers team. So I really enjoyed my conversation with him, and I think you will as well. Find us, by the way, if you have not done so already, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Rate us, review us. Please give us a rating. We love the ratings. They're huge for us. And let us know what you think, especially if you like what you hear. We're going to try to come at you every week this season, hopefully on Monday morning, unless something crazy happens, and sort of do a week in review and look ahead a little bit. As this team will certainly be in the conversation for the National League playoffs yet again. So we want to make sure that we are talking about it as much as possible. Tom Hodricourt, Todd Rosiak, Journal Sentinel beat reporters, do a phenomenal job covering this team. You can find all that at jsonline.com. And let's join Todd now while we're talking about him. Here now is Todd Rosiak, beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. He was there for all 4 games of this homestand against the St. Louis Cardinals, the Brewers winning 3 of 4, capping it off in dramatic fashion with a walk-off double by Christian Yelich on Sunday, in the same homestand where Christian Yelich homered in all 4 games. I think the biggest struggle everybody who covers this team has right now is trying to find a way to put in context or describe Christian Yelich in a way that hasn't been done already. There are so many adjectives. There's only so many adjectives in the English language, and I don't know. I think we've used them all, Todd. So I guess I'm curious if you've seen anything like this, maybe a Ryan Braun stretch where a player just could not get out no matter what other teams did, or if this is as good as you've seen a player. And this goes back to the second half of last year when he was so good last year and earned that MVP award. Is this just tops for anything you've seen?
I mean, it's very much like he was at the end of last year, I would say. the dual cycles against the Reds, and just how he just continually picked up his game as the calendar ticked away the days in September to October. You know, I think there are a lot of people probably that were maybe skeptical, you know, and I read different things around baseball, you know, different people who crunch stats and analytics, and, you know, then you've got the fantasy sports people who are saying, oh, this was just a fluke. You know, he'll go back to hitting 20, 25 homers, and, you know, he'll have a good year, but there's no way that he's going to be able to, you know, match or come close to matching what he did last year. Hey, I mean, we're four games in, but I mean, he's really not getting pitched to all that much, and he's still doing crazy damage. I mean, the numbers that he's putting up are remarkable. And, you know, the game today, I think it's kind of a microcosm of what you're going to see to come for Yelich. You know, he might get, you know, one or two pitches a day now, a game that he can actually do damage on, and he's doing it. And all the other times, pitchers are just pitching around him, you know, intentionally walking him, intentionally walking him, and he's patient. You know, like today, he had the home run in the first inning. He had three walks after that, and then the walk-off double. So it's been fun to watch so far. You know, we're running out of ways to ask him and Craig Counsell, you know, how do you describe what is continuing here, what we're seeing? And after the game today, I think we got the best summation from Ryan Braun, who is always good at, you know, kind of looking at the big picture and summing things up. I'll just read you the quote that he gave us. He said, I've never seen anyone this good at baseball for this long. I mean, maybe Bonds in his prime, as great as Mike Trout is. I've seen Pujols. I've never seen anyone this good for this long. If you go back, we're looking at a pretty large sample size, you know, and he's talking about obviously the end of last season as well, you know, down the stretch. I think everybody should take the time to appreciate it, because what we're witnessing is greatness. It's absolutely incredible. Even his outs are on the barrel. He's obviously not getting many pitches to hit. It's incredible. It's fun to watch. It's fun to be a part of, and it's special. So, you know, Braun can be, you know, he's good at kind of tying things up neatly with a bow. And, you know, you might call that maybe a little bit over the top, but I mean, the way he's been swinging the bat, I don't really think there's much hyperbole in there. The guy's just out of his mind. And now it's going to be interesting to see this coming series in Cincinnati, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, they're playing in a bandbox, number one, Great American Ballpark. And number two, Yelich killed the Reds last year, as we all know. I mentioned the dual cycles against them. You know, are they going to pitch to him? How are they going to handle him now? So it's going to be fun to watch these next three games. And who knows, he hits a homer tomorrow, then he's made major league history.
Yeah, and Ryan Braun has certainly had some stretches in his career where he's been pretty unstoppable, but these are now back-to-back homestands with Christian Yelich as the centerpiece. That regular season homestands that I can't remember in all my years of following the Brewers. You had the regular season closing last year against the Tigers. The Brewers needed all three of those wins. Yelich had a homer with his brother there, who was in the military and hadn't seen him in a long time. Two homers the next night, sealed up the MVP, threatened the Triple Crown. The Brewers sealed off the NL Central, or at least forced a one-game playoff. And then you had the start to this season. And I don't. I'm sure there are other homestands that are probably more meaningful in the long run than what we saw the first four games of 2019. But that had a lot of buzz, and it's a best case scenario for the Brewers trying to get off on the right foot. What images are you going to remember from this? I think the Kane catch is certainly going to be up there. The Yelich walk off on Sunday is going to be on the list. Josh Hader's immaculate inning on Saturday night, where he struck out three batters on nine pitches. When you think back on this, as the year goes on, there's going to be a lot that takes place between here and the end of the year. But when you look back on the first homestand of 2019, what's the one thing that's going to stick out, if not Christian Yelich homering in the first four games of the season?
Well, I think you just answered your own question. You gave the top.
I probably did. Yes, I did.
Yeah. I mean, the homers, obviously, the Lorenzo Cain catch that saved the game the other night. Was that Friday night? These games are all running together already. And then the Josh Hader immaculate inning last night. Just crazy stuff. And I guess if you're going to go, I don't know, for me, I go by what I've never seen before and what will stick with me the most. And to me, it'll be that immaculate inning. I was fortunate enough to be covering the series last year in Cincinnati, and it was very early April, striking eight of the nine batters out that he faced to close out that game, which was pretty remarkable in and of itself. But then to see him, you know, strike out the side on nine pitches and only one guy actually making contact with the ball, that's going to stick with me for a while. You know, the two triple plays I've seen in person, and still I have yet to see a no hitter. So that's something that I'd like to see at some point. But just in terms of the overall dominance of what happened, that Hader immaculate inning was pretty darn remarkable.
Jumping back to Yelich real quick, one of the trends we've seen in Major League Baseball, and there was news of this again on Sunday night with the Boston Red Sox locking up Xander Bogaerts to a long-term deal. There have been a lot of top players who've been signed to extensions recently. Mike Trout certainly among them, Chris Sale, Alex Bregman, Jacob DeGrom. The difference with Christian Yelich, is that he's got several years remaining on his contract before it expires, but I'm sure the Brewers have at least thought about putting in some feelers about locking him up for even longer. He's already under a pretty lengthy contract here, five years here. But what is your sense of, is that something that the Brewers are going to address in the near future, or do we need to see more of this play out before either side is going to come to the table and start talking about a bigger long-term picture?
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, Christian Yelich obviously would be open to listening to from the Brewers, and he said that in spring training. But from the Brewers' perspective, there really is, at this point, there's no real reason to do it. You know, he's, if you include the club option in 2022, which is for $15 million, you know, they've got him under contract for four more years, basically, at very reasonable prices. And I get, you know, if you want to, you know, reward him for what he's doing, because obviously he's drastically outperformed what he already signed. But you, there's a number of things that you have to take into consideration, you know, age, future injuries that you can never predict, you know, the unforeseen, stuff like that. It's a gamble on both sides. And Christian Yelich, you know, he willingly signed a very team-friendly deal back in 2015 with the Marlins, you know, and at that point, it was really good money for him, and it was backloaded. And, you know, this year he's going to be making $9.75 million, I believe. Next year it goes up to $12.5. So, you know, the Brewers, I think, are always going to be cognizant of finances, and rightfully so, because it's a small market. And they're also possibly going to be gun shy about extending guys, you know, especially when they've got years remaining on a contract. We all remember how that what happened the last time that happened with Ryan Braun. And what has everybody been saying for the last 3 or 4 years now? Get rid of Braun, get rid of Braun. You just can never see into the future, obviously. So my guess would be is that they're just going to continue to let this thing play out. And, you know, Yelich is being a good soldier, and he's saying all the right things, and you take him at his word that he's fine with what he's being paid. No doubt he'd like more, but he's still making a pretty darn good living. And who knows, you know, in another couple of years, maybe the Brewers do approach him about it, and things become serious and they try to lock him up long term. He's been nothing shy of an exemplary citizen. He's done and said all the right things, always available to the media, you know, fan friendly, does things in the community, very laid back. He's just the perfect fit for Milwaukee in so many ways. So, you know, that plus obviously the performance on the field, all those reasons are why you'd want to keep him in a Brewer uniform for as long as possible. But I think that's a discussion that's probably going to best be had in several more years.
Another candidate for that would be Josh Hader, another guy we've been talking about. He's thrown 30 pitches this year, all fastballs, and he's already got 7 strikeouts. He's got 2 saves already. He worked a multi-inning stint on opening day, got two full innings, and then came back a couple days later and got a save on Saturday night. And last year, the way the Brewers used him, they're very careful with him, and I'm not sure we would have seen him throw multiple innings and then come back 2 days later, at least earlier on in the season, like he did here in 2019. And Craig Counsell was asked about that and really indicated that he was going to be as as cautious with Josh Hader as he was last year. It's going to be the same type of thing. I wonder what you think about that. Do you think that's true, that they're going to be extra cautious, that we'll see multiple days off pretty much on standby for most of the year? Or do you think second full year now in the big leagues, we see more Josh Hader like you saw this homestand, where yeah, he'll throw multiple innings, but they're not going to hesitate to bring him back in a big situation really in the near future?
Well, I think it all comes down to what the player is comfortable with and what the player tells the manager. And I can guarantee you that you know, Josh Hader and Craig Counsell have a very open line of communication with regard to his availability. And from the Brewers' perspective, certainly they're going to be as careful as possible with Josh Hader and give him the appropriate rest that he needs. And, you know, Hader is a very unique reliever in that he can, you know, you can bring him in for 2/3 of an inning to blow away a couple guys, or you can pitch him as many as 3. And he can be effective in that role as well. There's not many guys out there that can do that and be as excel the way Josh Hader has. You know, that being said, until Jeremy Jeffress comes back, which, you know, we don't know how long that's going to be. It could be another 2 weeks or so if everything goes according to plan with his rehab schedule. You know, Josh Hader's primary role is going to be closing games out, whereas when Jeffress comes back, then all of a sudden you have a little bit more flexibility in when you can use Hader. You know, maybe Craig Counsell decides he's best used as a closer this year and keeps him in that role. But we all know that Craig Counsell likes to use guys in different roles and take advantage of their versatility. So until Jeffress comes back and proves that he's pitching, you know, close to the level that he was last year, which is pretty darn good. I mean, who knows if he'll ever get back to that level. But until the Brewers have some sense of comfort that Jeffress is back and he's going to be able to perform, I would sense that the Brewers are going to be, you know, maybe even a little bit more cautious with Hader, you know, using him in those one inning bursts. Although the other night is that he did have that 2-inning save. I'd be surprised if they used him more than 2 innings until Jeffress is back and good. So again, it's just another situation that kind of bears monitoring, and it's really a shame that Corey Knebel was taken out of the plan before the season even started with the torn UCL, because with a healthy and consistent Knebel in the mix as well, Hader and Jeffress. I mean, we saw how good they could be, those three down the stretch last year, but to have them for a whole season would have been really ridiculous.
Yeah, since we last chatted, the news came down on Corey Knebel that he would be lost for the year. I think we kind of saw that coming. UCL injuries are usually a nice way of saying that Tommy John surgery is in the near future, and that is what Corey Knebel has elected to do. A little Freudian slip there, because with Corey Knebel's injury, you've got everybody referring to Craig Kimbrell, who is still unsigned and on the free agent market. And Tom Haudricourt wrote at jsonline.com sort of his expectation is that there is not going to be any play to go after a guy like Craig Kimbrell or Dallas Keuchel for that matter. But at the same time, you can see why the Brewers would still be interested in engaging with him. I think one of the under-discussed aspects of this is that it's pretty simple. I think Craig Kimbrell wants more than a one-year deal, and I don't think anybody wants to give it to him, and certainly that's true of the Milwaukee Brewers. I think until he's going to ask for something south of a multi-year deal, nobody's going to sign him. I don't know. Am I oversimplifying it? You think at this point there would be teams that are offering him multi-year deals? I think it's much simpler than we're giving it credit for.
Yeah, I mean, without being privy to any of the discussions, I would guess that Craig Kimbrell's asking price and his agent's asking price is just way too high right now and probably unrealistic. You know, I would assume they're asking for multiple years and ridiculous money, and teams have just balked at it, and, you know, rightfully so, because, you know, if you sign Craig Kimbrell today, when can you pitch him in a game? You know, how long is it going to take before he's able to start closing games for you? We don't know that. You know, I'm sure he's doing some semblance of workouts. Maybe he's pitching to the Scottsdale fighting artichokes like Kyle Loesch did several years ago before he signed with the Brewers. I don't know. But, you know, I would think that if he were reasonable in his demands and realistic in his demands, he would have been signed by now. And hey, I mean, I guess more power to him if he feels like he can hold out and force a team's hand, you know, like the Brewers, if they feel they got to that level of desperation that they might, you know, sign him for 4 years or something like that, then maybe the gamble pays off. But I just don't see that happening right now. And, you know, there's no question the Brewers could use him. There's no question the Brewers, I think, are interested in him. But I also think that the price is going to have to come way down before that becomes any, you know, before that can even come close to being a reality.
Yeah, Brewers NL Central rival Cubs could use him too after their bullpen had some struggles in back-to-back days in their series. They start 1-2 against the Rangers. But moving from a guy who could be in the bullpen to a guy who was in the bullpen, Corbin Burnes, because actually I thought the bullpen looked okay in the first homestand. Alex Wilson looked good. Chase Anderson, okay. Matt Albers looks strong. Alex Claudio looks fine. Corbin Burnes was a key piece of that last year down the stretch, and with the intent to move him to the starting rotation for this year. And Sunday was his first start of the year, and it's an interesting sort of mix. I mean, he struck out 12 guys in 5 innings, which is incredible. Incredible. And yet he also gave up 3 home runs, and when he left the game, the Brewers were losing 4-1. So it's sort of a mixed bag in that regard. What did you make of Corbin Burnes' start? And I mean, on the one hand, you want to be really excited about it, the fact that he could strike out that many guys in such a short window of time. And on the other hand, he didn't work deeply into the game and did give up some home runs. So what was your takeaway from seeing Corbin Burnes work?
I was most interested in what he said after the game, which was, you know, we talked a lot in the spring with him, and I talked to him actually yesterday about this too, the day before his start, about him being excited about being able to go in and start a game and really, you know, use that 5-pitch mix that he has and being able to attack hitters in a variety of different ways and set guys up. And it's the kind of repertoire that allows a starting pitcher to go through a lineup 3 times. And today he noticed real early on, along with Manny Pena, that the fastball had some extra movement on it, had a little bit more zip on it, and the slider was working as well. So they decided to pretty much stick with those 2 pitches. And those 2 pitches are what Burnes primarily threw in his stint as a reliever last season, and to pretty good effect. So he was able to go 5 innings, strike out the 12, as you mentioned, which was one off the franchise record for a pitcher making his first start for the team behind Freddie Peralta's 13 last year. And both those guys obviously are in the rotation together now. So a lot to be excited about if you're a Brewers fan in that perspective. But he also gave up the 3 home runs, obviously. They were 3 fastballs. Paul DeJong kind of went up, and that one was a little up and in, and he went up and got it. But the other 2 were pretty much right out over the plate to Carpenter and Goldschmidt. And you can't do that with either one of those guys. Obviously, they make you pay. So there, you know, obviously there's room for growth, and he's going to get an awful lot more opportunities to grow. But what we saw from today is certainly a great jumping off point and a great sign. You know, he did not look tremendous in the spring, and I know we sometimes put too much stock in numbers and everything because guys are working on things, but you know, I think all things being equal and considering all the factors, there was absolutely nothing to be discouraged about with Corbin Burnes today. It was a positive step forward for his first time out.
Yeah, as exciting as Christian Yelich has been with 4 home runs, Paul Goldschmidt also had 4 home runs in this series, including 1 on Sunday. So, and no shame giving up a home run to that guy. He's going to be a problem for the Brewers over the course of the month of April and the season at large. I'm sure we'll talk more about the Brewers' young rotation on future podcasts. But before I let you go, one last question about Lorenzo Cain's game-saving catch, or center field in general. Cain makes that play that will probably go down as one of the best moments of 2019 for any Milwaukee sport. The home run stolen away off the bat of Jose Martinez that accounted for the 27th and final out on opening day to give the Brewers a 5-4 win. When this roster was announced, it wasn't actually something I thought a lot about because you know, because so many of these positions were spoken for beforehand. But if Lorenzo Cain is out for any reason, and we got a little bit of an injury scare with him when he jammed his thumb in this series, what happens to the what is the Brewers' plan B for center field? I imagine in the short term you can get Christian Yelich in center field, but what happens if Lorenzo Cain has to miss any time? Who's the center fielder on this team?
Yeah, I think if it's short term, you know, if you're talking like a week or less, it would probably be Christian Yelich sliding over, and then you know you've got Ben Gamel that you can play in right field, and I think the Brewers would be comfortable with that. I also know that the Brewers have no problems utilizing Ben Gamel in center. I don't know necessarily that they'd want to do it for several weeks at a time. I think if it were a longer term injury, the Brewers might have to consider some other things. But I think right now that the two obvious choices that are on the 25 man right now would be sliding Yelich over and then using Gamel in the corner, or using Gamel in center and then keeping Yelich where he is. And the Brewers obviously have guys in the minor leagues that could get a look at some point. I don't think any of them would be considered long term answers. So maybe you bring one of those guys up as depth. Tyrone Taylor was one name that Craig Counsell was mentioning this spring, and he obviously had a very good camp. And that's a guy that's on the 40-man as well that can play center. He can play all three positions in the outfield. And I think the Brewers would be comfortable utilizing him in certain circumstances. So, if you're looking for a depth guy coming up from the minor leagues, that's probably the name that would come to the forefront, I would think, early on in the season. But I also think that the Brewers and Brewer fans don't want to think about any kind of extended absence for Lorenzo Cain, just because of everything that he does for the team defensively, offensively, on the base paths, in the clubhouse. The guy's just he's really earned the money that he's making so far with that contract, and really lived up to it, and he's really been a joy to watch and to cover.
Raced home from first to score on Christian Yelich's double to win the game on Sunday, and yeah, like you said, Christian Yelich is the MVP. He's obviously the guy you can least afford to live without, but this is a very different team if Lorenzo Cain isn't patrolling center field, and that would be seeing him a little bit dinged up was definitely a cause for butterflies in the stomachs of Brewer fans over the weekend, but looks like he is fine, good to go. The Brewers will be in Cincinnati starting on Monday, and now the road portion of the 2019 season begins. Todd Rosiak, read everything he has to write at jsonline.com. He'll be covering the Brewers all season long. Thank you for joining us, Todd. Look forward to chatting with you again very soon. Appreciate it.
All right, JR, have a good one.
Thanks to Todd for the conversation. Let's move now to my chat with Brewers third base coach Ed Cedar. I read a great article from MLB.com's Adam McAlvey talking to Brewers bench coach Pat Murphy. And Murphy has the theory that Ed Cedar has a little bit to do with Christian Yelich's success. We've talked so much about Yelich already here on this podcast, and floated the idea that because Cedar, who throws batting practice every day, has a little bit of a cut to his pitch, and that Christian Yelich has taken so many swings against Ed Cedar that maybe that extra movement, that cut, has enabled Christian Yelich to hit a cutter and hit a pitch that's pretty popular in Major League Baseball right now, and that has caused him to take a huge jump forward in his first year in four games with the Milwaukee Brewers, to go from a really good baseball player to the MVP that he was in 2018. Remains to be seen if that's true, or I guess it could be true. We probably will never know, but I thought that was an interesting tidbit. Ed Cedar is a lot more than just the third base coach. He definitely gets his attention for being the third base coach. Frequently, if a runner gets thrown out at the plate, Ed Cedar's name gets brought up, and not necessarily in a good way, but he definitely has contributed a lot in a good way to this team. And we talked a lot about his job responsibilities, but also his minor league career, what he was like as a player, some of the assets that he had as a player that he's been able to translate to being the coach that he is. We talked about, sort of what makes a fun-loving atmosphere like the Brewers have had for the last couple of years, if that's something that can be coached, because Ed Cedar is fairly well-known as a fun-loving guy. If you saw him on opening day, he was greeted by some pretty good cheers when he came out waving his arms at the fans during the lineup before the games, where all the coaches and players came out, heard their name announced. And he's a really fun dude, and it seems like that has rubbed off a little bit on the Brewers if they didn't already possess that. The players themselves possess that same sort of character, that same sort of fun-loving mentality. So here, without further ado, is my conversation with Ed Cedar. I am joined by Brewers third base coach Ed Cedar. Ed has been in the organization for how many? Is this 27 years?
28 years
in some capacity.
I lose track too. I'm sure somebody does.
Tell what were those early days like? Because you were throwing batting practice to like Molitor and Yelp once upon a time, right?
Yeah, that was fun. Back over there in Chandler, actually, when they would leave the team would go and play somewhere in spring training. Those, the big boys would stay back. Sort of like now.
Sure.
And I would be the one designated to throw them BP. They probably don't even remember that.
No.
I remember it.
You probably reminded them, right? On opening day, you had a shirt and you came into the interview room with Lorenzo Cain makes the game-saving catch. You have the Not Today shirt. I kind of feel like you knew what you were doing. You knew that you were showing that off a little bit. Did you have that on during the whole game, or was that's something you added as a prop later in the day after you made the catch?
Nope, Marcus Hanel and I actually added it as a prop.
Nice.
Right when we came in, we took our jerseys off and put the Not Today t-shirts on and went parading into the locker room and everything. And I ended up in the press room because I was actually I was in charge of Lorenzo's boys.
So,
and I had kind of lost track of them for
a second.
Got it.
All right, that's a problem.
Yeah.
They ended up in the interview room.
Yeah, so it was perfect. It was perfect.
It was awesome. That's great. I imagine most fans do know that there's more to the job than just being a third base coach. I don't know how extensive they realize the behind the scenes stuff goes. So I guess in general terms, what are some of the responsibilities you have? It's not just waving guys home. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, well, you saw a little bit of it. I've thrown group one like for the last 12 years at the major league
level. Batting practice. You're throwing batting practice.
Correct. Do the ground ball routine. You witnessed that. We do ground ball routine sometimes.
Sure.
Earlier today, we were out with Manny Pena, Marcus Hanel, Robinson Diaz, and I were out with Manny Pena doing some throwing the bases. You do your scouting of the opposing team, watch their relay guys as a third base coach. I watched their relay guys throw to third as well as to home on video, and then I also watched the outfielders throwing the bases and the analytical department and the video department.
Man,
they get that all set up for me, so it makes it really easy for me to all of a sudden pull something up where I'm going to see how's Colton Wong throwing, the last 2 weeks or whatever. Maybe not so much at the beginning of the year, but towards the end of the year or towards the middle, or Ozuna, how's Ozuna throwing from the outfield? And they get together stuff for me and where I get to see ball. See balls, actually see plays live, which is important to me.
So you do all of that, and yet the only time people seem to know that you're there is when a guy gets thrown out at home.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that comes with the territory, but it's a little like an offensive lineman. Nobody sees all the millions of good plays. They see the one bad. How do you respond to that? I know you've been doing this a long time, so it probably rolls off your back pretty well, but when you are in the spotlight for that one reason and nobody's seen all the other stuff, so how do you handle that?
Yeah, you just, I remember Dale Swain when I first started doing it, telling me, he's going, hey, everyone, whenever you send the guy, it could be the best send in the world where no one else would have sent him and he scores. It's anybody would have sent him on that one.
Yeah,
but
right.
Then when a guy gets thrown out on a perfect throw with two outs, and because with two outs you rarely ever send anybody, he's out there, you go, what is he doing? So
yeah.
I pretty much sponge out the bad things and try and keep the good things in.
You've been here at the big league level. Dale Swaim is one of the five managers that you've worked with. You're going to surpass Bill Castro's record for most years with the big league team. What's the secret to sticking around? I mean, what is it that's allowed you to stay here as long as you have?
I don't know. Hopefully it's my work ethic, communication skills, and, baseball's kind of, really negative sport if you think about it, because if you do something 3 out of 10 times, you're an all-star. But you're failing 7 out of 10.
Sure.
So it's, try and keep the guys motivated, keep them positive, I guess people have told me that that's what I'm really good at. No matter what's happening, that they could always count on me for being being there.
You see a guy like Mike Schilt, the Cardinals, who's been in an organization a long time, become manager. Brian Snitker with Atlanta. I mean, I have to think that's crossed your mind at some point that you could be a major league manager. Is that still something you could you see yourself doing someday? Or
I actually don't. I enjoy what I'm doing right now. Pleasure working for Craig and actually all the managers I've worked for. And probably I'm getting closer to my end.
Sure, yeah.
Than I.
But so are they. So are they.
That I'm getting closer to being a big league manager.
Sure. All right. Well, that's fair. You grew up in Illinois, but not far from Wisconsin, Waukegan, and Lake County College, I believe, is where you played baseball. So I don't know if you were a Cubs fan or White Sox fan growing up, or maybe a Brewers fan. There were a lot of good things going on with the 1980s, early 1980s Brewers teams. Did you have it? What was your relationship to baseball? I mean, I'm assuming you were a fan growing up.
Yep, big-time family, big-time White Sox fans, and was drafted by the White Sox.
Right, yeah.
Signed,
awesome.
But saved with the White Sox. It was so cool. Right after I signed, I went to Comiskey Park and worked out with the major league team, like, for 4 or 5 days where I'm going, man, this is pretty cool and everything.
Yeah.
Seeing the people that you just got done watching, you know, on TV and then working out with them and then, like, another day later, I was in Florida where there was no air conditioning.
Right.
Our locker room wasn't very good, and I was back to reality in rookie ball.
Yeah, a taste of what was to come, because I know you managed in Ogden and Helena, all those far off the map places to us. But I think you were with the White Sox 12 years?
I was 8 years into my, and then towards the end, did the player coach thing where they saw that. I don't know, pretty good job by them. They saw, hey, this guy will probably make a pretty good coach.
Sure.
Because I played everywhere. You know, in the minor leagues, I played everywhere but second base.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. So
you've been
caught,
pushed a little.
Yeah, and that was, as, you know, in double A where they're grooming people to see what they could do in the big leagues, I was playing everywhere.
It serves you well now that you're throwing batting practice, that you're a little pitching. Well, what were you like as a minor league player? I know you didn't, I don't think you got above double A, but you were there for a long time. Stole 92 bases. You kind of have your stat line. You've, you know, got some pop, got some speed. So what was your career like?
Career was like played every game like it was my last game.
Sure.
Where Bobby Winkles, our guy, said that I was one heck of a ball player, but he didn't think I was going to ever go through a whole season healthy due to me running into walls or breaking up double plays or taking catchers out. I treated it like I definitely treated baseball like a contact sport. And Bobby Winkles was like our coordinator and our farm director and Hawk Harrelson, and they would watch me. They'd go, yeah, I don't think he's going to ever make it through an entire season.
So you, probably, you were hurt a lot.
Yeah, they were correct in that analogy.
Now that you've been here a while, and it's kind of cool that you've never really left the Midwest. You were with the White Sox, and obviously you left the Midwest many times. But the organization you've always been a part of is the Midwest. I mean, do you think of yourself as a Midwestern guy?
For sure. No, definitely. And like I said, even when I was a White Sox fan, I remember my tickets. I mean, my sister getting tickets to come up and watch the Brewers in County Stadium.
Okay.
And then we would watch the Packers. We had
my sister had the gold package.
Right. So we would go watch the Packers because we're definitely Packer fans.
Well,
we are not
like
Bear fans.
That's excellent. You're too close to the border to be a Bears fan.
Yes.
What are these teams, these last couple teams, it helps that they're winning, but they're pretty lighthearted, a lot of fun guys. And I got to think you're a big part of that just because you are known as sort of this fun-loving personality and this guy who keeps things loose. Is it just a matter of having the right guys? Is there a way to set that tone, or does it just have to happen organically? You have to have the athletes who are that way to make that work, to make that the common theme.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, and you also got to have a manager. Counts does a great job, and when he first took over, wanted to create the culture, and that was our job to help him create it in any way we possibly could. Players coming in, that's what they're taught, either from other organizations or what. Hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have fun doing it, but you're definitely going to work hard, play hard, and we're gonna have fun while we're doing it. And it's just a culture that counts as built here, where other teams actually talk about our culture. It's kind of weird when you hear people talk about, man, the Brewers, no matter what's happening, seems like they're having fun over there and they're playing hard. So you got to tip your hat off to Counts, David Stearns bringing in the right people and all that. So it was Mark Antonasio going out and doing the stuff needed to be, you know, it's all like one one pretty good family that we got going on right now.
That's all we got for you today. The Milwaukee Brewers out on the road now to Cincinnati, but they'll be back home this weekend. The Chicago Cubs, everybody's favorite local rival, will be in town at Miller Park, surely bringing their legions of fans this weekend for another series at Miller Park. So buckle up for that one. That should be fun. The Cubs struggled to start the year so far, 1-2. After a really rough one, particularly on Sunday, on a wild pitch, lost 11-10 to the Rangers, Texas Rangers. So the Cubs will be looking to get right, probably there against the Brewers. That always promises intrigue and drama. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, find us on Stitcher, Spotify, especially on Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating and review. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm JR Radcliffe at JRRADCLIFFE. Let me know what you think. We'll chat with you again very, very soon. Thanks.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.